We're going to wait close matter on the docket today, people against Shupper.
So, Your Honor, Holly contacted Mr. Carberry's cell phone and left a message, but there was no information. And I checked the first floor again, so.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hoogerheide. After that report, it would appear, Mr. Yasty, that we've been unsuccessful in reaching your opponent today. How do you wish to proceed? Want to make your argument? We'd be happy to hear from you.
I'd be happy to make an argument. He's quoting his interest in.
Well, I've got some questions. I'm pleased to have you, and I'm sure my colleagues are pleased to have you make your presentation.
Good afternoon. I'm pleased to court. My name is Majid Yasty, registration number 36043. Representing the people in this case. There are three issues raised before this court. One is the indigency determination made by the trial court. Second issue is the Arguello advisements. And the third issue is the recusal motion that was denied. I would suggest the logical way of approaching is to address either the first issue or the third issue, because either of those two issues, if the court agrees with the defendants and the defendant prevails, they are the resulting structural error, and that would require automatic reversal, which would make the Arguello advisement issue a moot issue.
Let's start with Arguello. The question I have for you is there any point at which sophistication of the defendant obviates the need to give an Arguello advisement? For example, do you have to give an Arguello advisement if the defendant is an attorney?
The case law, Your Honor, includes in every case Arguello, King, even cases before Arguello, focus on the totality of the circumstances in determining whether an implied waiver had been effected by the defendant, which includes background of the defendant, familiarity with the legal procedures, awareness of the issues, consequences, and all those factors. So definitely, it is part of the equation, whether the defendant was aware to make a knowing and intelligent implied waiver based on his conduct. So definitely, to answer Your Honor's question, somebody who is well versed in law, like an attorney, or in this case, Mr. Shupper, had all the qualities based on his motions and his arguments at trial of an attorney, and was actually well represented, did a very good job in representing himself. And that is not even questioned by Mr. Carberry in his reply brief. The only question is that whether the fact that he decided not to hire an attorney was a voluntary choice or not, which turns on the question of whether the indigency determination was correct or not. So even defendant concedes that if the court agrees that the indigency determination was correct, then at that point, Mr. Shupper voluntarily decided not to hire an attorney. And based on his knowledge and his performance, he was aware of the charges and consequences, and his implied waiver should be considered knowing and intelligent.
Well, I don't presume to speak for Mr. Carberry here. But as I understand the argument, the argument goes like this. Arguello really doesn't come into the equation so much. because I can't waive the fact that I don't have any money. And I was considered indigent before trial, or after trial was completed. But immediately before trial, I was considered not indigent. How can that possibly happen? In the course of the trial, I certainly, there was no significant change in my economic circumstances.
Your Honor, this goes back to the issue of indigency determination and whether the trial court's ruling is supported by the facts presented at that hearing, which happened on December 19th, 2001. At that hearing, all the information that was provided to the court supports the court's ruling. As the judge might have said, what happened afterwards, after the trial, is not relevant because the information provided at that point, the representation made at that point, was not before the court. So the basis for this court's decision should be the record on December 19th presented before the trial court. If based on that the court's decision can be supported, we cannot introduce new factors by reviewing the, as Mr. Carter tries to do in his arguments, we cannot factor in post-trial developments, whether it's in terms of facts presented, evidence presented, or arguments being made. Those are irrelevant to that determination. As long as the court's ruling is supported by the facts presented on December 19th, 2001, which is what our position is, and I argue in my brief, then this court should not be concerned about what happens afterwards. Any questions on the other two issues?
Well, why don't you speak a while on bias?
The recusal motions raise two kinds of grounds for recusal. One are the rulings, is the rulings made by the trial judge. Of course, case law is clear. The rulings of the court cannot be used as a basis for bias. Here, the claim is that because the bond reduction ruling was against Mr. Schober, then that shows bias by the court, or whether because he forced, quote unquote, forced defendant to proceed pro se, that's an indication of bias. These are all court rulings supported by facts and cannot be grounds as bias. The second kind of category of factors is the terminology used by the court in characterizing the behavior of the defendant. For example, making a reference to the fact that he secreted millions of dollars overseas to hide his accounts. That is a characterization of the facts presented to the court, and that in itself, and I have cited cases, that by itself does not support a claim that the court was biased. These were the only two, and let me also emphasize that there is a third motion of recusal, which is after the trial, but before the sentencing. Again, that is not before this court because what we are talking about is whether the judge should have recused himself before the trial, and that is based on the second recusal motion because the defendant concedes that the first recusal motion was insufficient. Mr. Carvey has conceded that in his opening. So the only question is that the evidence presented in the form of two affidavits in the second motion are sufficient to establish bias, and our position is that they are not because they rely on the court rulings and simple characterization of the evidence before the court.
All right, Mr. Yazdi.
Unless the court has any question, I would like to ask the court to affirm defendant's convictions.
Thank you, Mr. Yazdi, for your remarks. I would note that it is just about 2:15, and Mr. Carberry still hasn't arrived.